Hello, welcome to the Mythology of Marksmanship podcast. I'm Morgan King, and today I want to talk about trigger control. It's kind of one of those fundamentals that I think a lot of people talk about, they emphasize, but yet it's one of the hardest things to implement. And I kind of want to talk about my philosophy on it, and then people can take it or leave it and do with it what they want. But I've thought about it a lot, and I've talked about it before on the podcast, and if you've ever shot around me much, I might have talked about it with you. But it's one of those things that it's definitely hard, and I'm probably gonna talk to Brady Allinson about it as well. It's something that me and him talked a lot about, I don't know. It's something to ramble on about, and hopefully people get something out of it. But I've done like a little thing where we briefly brushed over the fundamentals of marksmanship in the past, but I think it's something I want to get back to, maybe go through individually and just focus on the things that I think make a huge difference in your shooting. I've talked about how I practice, and mainly what I do in practice is what I'm going to talk about here, because I think it is the most important thing that we do when you're shooting anything, okay, is I think trigger control. And now do I think all the other fundamentals are not important? No. And I guess I don't want to rank order them in a specific order and say, look, this one's the one you focus on here. This is because it changes by day to day and your shooting type and all that type of stuff. So that's my disclaimer for this is I'm not exactly playing favorites, but almost playing favorites in my fundamentals. And the reason why I do that is, yes, they're all important, but I think certain ones, this is maybe what I would say, is I think there are certain ones that are harder to isolate, and there's ones that are harder to do in practice. And what I mean by in practice is put into practice, not to actually practice. I think it's hard to practice, it's hard to put into practice, it's hard to do when things are on the line. So it's something that I think is pretty relevant to talk about. So just want to start off, like, this is not as big a deal. The thing why I think people don't practice as much in shooting rifles is because, let's be honest, it's not as big a deal in the rifle world as it is archery world. You'll hear about trigger control and target panic and all that type of stuff. You'll hear it talked about like profusely. And the reason is because it's a completely different game, and you can see your wobble more because we're shooting in different positions and lock time. So the time between the trigger going off and the projectile leaving your immediate control, meaning your body, the things that you do, that time is less. Like, we're talking fractions of a second with a rifle, and we're talking about, you know, a half a second or a quarter second or something like that, like a larger fraction of a second, shall we say. You know, we're talking about sub tenth of a second, maybe sub 1/100th of a second for a rifle, and we're talking about a quarter to a half a second or something like that. I don't know what the actual deal is, but I know it's way smaller with a rifle than it is a bow. So, but that being said, we're also shooting targets that are microscopic when we compare. You know, you're shooting if you're shooting like penny or like, you know, quarter inch targets at 10 yards or something stupid small with a bow, but it's at 10 yards versus we're shooting, we're trying to put little tiny groups on a paper at 100 yards, or we're trying to shoot a 4-inch plate at 400 yards out off of a position, you know, like things like that. So it definitely still makes a difference. And this is going to come back into, why I think, as far as like if I was to rank order like certain things, once you get to a certain level, I feel like, you know, you have a few fundamentals that are going to be harder to practice, but yet more important when you get to a certain level. And I feel like the trigger control type deal, now I'm drawing a blank, but I shouldn't be, but the natural point of aim, that one is a big one, because now what we're trying to do with trigger control, the ultimate goal, and this is, there's been some stuff put out by people that I don't like. Okay. And I'm going to explain what I mean, because there is this old philosophy that, and I've heard it, I've watched videos on it, I've heard people talk about it, where they say that you do not want to be surprised by your trigger. Because there was that old thing that says you want to be surprised by your trigger, like you go to hunter safety, like, you know, squeeze until you're surprised, and then that means you did a good trigger pull. But yet, in the heat of the moment, in like a battle situation with your gun, you know, you say you got a pistol or something like that, and then you're talking about the things that you got to do to save your life, which I'm not going to speak to a battle thing, but I'm just saying, you're meaning to tell me that when you're somebody's coming at you and you're trying to shoot them, that all of a sudden that you're not just hammering the trigger home. I don't know. I've never been in that situation. I don't know what it takes, but I know that there's things that are going to change your ability to be able to do that, to be able to be surprised. Like, you're not going to go squeeze, boom, you know, a mover comes along and you got to hit a mover. Sometimes it's got to be just, the trigger has to go off right now. So I think there's different situations, right? But then there's that time where you're trying to thread a needle on something, and you're trying to hit a 2-inch KYL at 400 yards to win a bunch of money or something. Now it's a completely different scenario, and that's the main scenario that we're in as shooters. It's also the situation that we're in as hunters most of the time, is we're trying to find a position. We get to choose we don't always get to choose our positions, but we get to choose. We can allow for enough time to make a perfect shot. And that's what we're talking about, is making a perfect shot, not these other scenarios, that come along that might hinder you from doing so. So anyway, when I talk about like, what is the perfect shot? 'Cause I feel like people should know in their own mind, be able to see what a perfect shot is. And I really truly believe that the perfect shot is one that you're surprised by. Okay. And what do I mean by that? So I've talked about this before, where there's two, in my mind, there's two different types of thinking, right? There are two different types of running through a stage. There is, if you are a beginner and you're listening to this, you're kind of be able to see what I mean. And if you're more experienced and you're listening to this, you're going to have to remember back to when you were a beginner. But if you remember back, or if you just think about the last time you ran a stage, depending on where you're at, and you're shooting a match, you've got all your gear and everything, you figured out what gear you need or whatever, and then you know where the targets are and all that type of stuff. If you're more experienced, you're thinking, the only thing you're really probably thinking about is the wind, where you're going to hold, and you already know where the bag's going to go and all that type of stuff. And it's just a matter of just flopping the bag down, throwing your gun on top of it, and getting in position, getting stable, and all that type of stuff. But that stuff is not the things you don't think about those things. Those things just happen. You know, it's like when you're driving a car, you can, it when you first learn to drive, it's really scary. You think about every little thing that you do. And this is the same back to the guys that are in the beginning. They probably did have to think, oh, I want to put my bag this away, and then I want to put my gun on it here, and then I want to get behind it. And so that's where their brain's at. Their brain is right here, right now, in that situation where if you're experienced, your brain isn't there. So where is it? Your brain. So the new guy, it's really good for them because they are able to be super present. But the problem is they don't have the capability at that point in their shooting until they can make that subconscious thought to be able to then now they have to transition to wind and trigger and all that type of stuff. And when they're just trying to get through the stage safely and efficiently, or somewhat efficiently, whereas the experienced guy, all he's thinking about is all the things that are a little bit harder. And so that allows you to be able to use some freedom. But that also, with that extra bit of freedom, it allows you to be able to think about things that you don't need to be thinking about. And so it's like, what do we need to be thinking about? And that's kind of what I've done a lot of thinking in my shooting to try to figure out what are those things that if I think about these things, they make a big difference in my ability to be able to hit more targets and to be consistent. And I feel like I've been able to be pretty consistent, and I feel like a lot of it is based upon my shooting process and what that is, and the ability to be able to, and not only my shooting process before stages, to be prepared for each scenario consistently, but then I feel like it's the process of letting a round go every time. What is that process, and how do I consistently do it in order to be able to put super accurate rounds on target and consistently? And I really feel like that comes down to a lot of times the focus that I put on the shot. And so back to the car scenario. So you're sitting there in the car thinking about, or in the beginning, you're thinking about, oh, I got to push on the brake now, especially if you say you're learning stick shift. You got to think about all the, like, when to push the clutch in and to move that. And like, let alone like somebody calls you on the phone, you're probably not going to be able to be able to talk on the phone and drive a stick when you're first learning, because you're thinking about each little movement that you're doing. But then you get better at it, and pretty soon it's just like second nature. You know what gear you're in all the time. You know, if people are slowing down in front of you, you shift down your fourth gear, you shift to third gear, and you know, and then you just kind of just keep going. And it's like just happens. Like pretty soon that stick shift starts driving like an automatic, and you get it, and you're doing things just like it's anything else, and you don't even have to think about driving it. And that takes time to do, but then all of a sudden your mind can do all kinds of different things while doing it. And I think there's certain things in shooting that need to be done that way. So that's what I call unconscious thought. Right. And I think almost everything in shooting needs to be, you need to be able to get it to the unconscious level. Right. I did a whole podcast on that a while ago where I talk about the process of doing that. In the beginning, you got conscious. Well, it's unconscious incompetence. Like you don't know what you don't know. And then all of a sudden you learn something and you're like, wow, I don't know. Or now I know what I don't know. I'm stupid. And then you learn how to do it. Now you have conscious competence, meaning now you know what to do, but you got to think about it all the time to be able to do it. So you're in that stage where, so first the unconscious incompetence is like you've never driven stick, but you're like, I didn't do it, no big deal. So you don't know that you can't do it. Then you get in the car and you start to do it, and you pop the clutch once and kill the engine, and you're like, frick, I don't know what I suck. I'm stupid. I don't know how to do it. And then somebody tells you, well, you got to slowly let out the clutch, and then you got to be able to do it. And so now you're like thinking about it. You're like, wow, oh my gosh, you know, okay. And then you slowly let out the clutch, and then you're thinking about it the whole time, giving a little gas at the same time. And then all of a sudden the car starts moving, and then you're going, and now you're moving. Well, pretty soon you do that enough times, and now all of a sudden you can do that without even thinking about it. And that's unconscious competence. And then there's a level above that where you can, where it's like, I think it's reflective consciousness or competence, where now you can look back on doing something unconsciously and improve upon it. Like almost unconsciously, like where you're like, man, I need to do this better, you know? So where you'll get so good at something to where you can almost pick up on the mistakes that you're doing unconsciously and then fix them. I don't know if that makes any sense, but there is a level above it. But anyways, point of the matter is if we can get everything, all of our skills into this unconscious competence category, that's great. But there are certain things that you can't, if you want to really get good at shooting, you cannot put them in that category. And there's really only one of them. Because natural point of aim, you can put that into that category. Like in the beginning, you might have to think, where's my wobble zone? If we want to think about natural point of aim. Because natural point of aim is the ability to be able to move your wobble to where if your body is relaxed, like you're not having to like muscle it into something, but your gun is like naturally, like, so if you're doing like if we want to talk about the most exaggerated way to figure out natural point, or not figure out, but the natural point of aim is standing, right? Standing unsupported. So if we're talking about it, you're breathing, you're doing all this stuff at the, where is your rifle wobbling? So you let your breath out and does that wobble when you let your breath out, if you're going up and down, and for right-handers, you know, it's doing this diagonal from low right to low left to high right, low left to high right. For me, it's the other way. And you're kind of making these little figure eight patterns across it. And where's that figure eight crossing that target every time? Is the, when it comes down, is it crossing it in the middle? Like, so you're making an X across the target, you know? And so, and obviously each position shrinks that like figure eight or whatever in smaller and smaller to where, you know, you're on a bag, and on the bag, say it's still kind of wobbly. Is that wobble like naturally in the middle of there? Or are you having to engage muscles and kind of muscle into it, to move it behind there? And naturally over time, you're going to get to where you're better at getting into positions and doing this stuff to where you center that wobble right in the middle of the target. So the whole wobble could be, you know, the size of the target, but that wobble never leaves that target without you really having to muscle it to where it naturally just wants to be there. That's where it falls to. And you get really good at doing that. And that can be put into that unconscious competence category or whatever, where you unconsciously do it without thought and you do it really good. Okay. Now, what do I think can't be put in that category? And that's trigger control, the thing I want to talk about. And it took me almost 20 minutes to be able to get there to where we even talk about trigger control. But I kind of wanted to go through that, why the thing, kind of talking about, you know, you can think about certain thing, or you need to get a lot of things into this efficient category where you don't have to think about it, so you can free up your mind to think about other things like wind, what you're holding, doing all this stuff. But then there's a point where all of your thoughts need to go away from the process of aiming your rifle and the process of figuring out where the wind is, and it needs to be centered on one thing, and that's trigger control, making the gun go boom. And I'm going to explain a little bit of why I think you need to consciously be thinking about that, because we are creatures that have adapted over time. Like if you think about it, we've adapted to be able to, like a kid, you don't have to really teach them in the beginning, like, and it's, we've adapted to our environment. I don't know any of you that had babies, like when they're really little, they're like very infantile. They don't know what danger really is. And so if you drop them, say they roll off the couch or something like that, they don't cry or get scared on the way down. It's when they hit the floor and they cry from the pain. that only happens once or twice, and then pretty soon they get scared when they start to fall, and the fall scares them because they know what's coming. Okay, but it takes time, and over time that instinct develops to where now if you take a contrast between my 9-month-old child and my 3-year-old child, the way they react to situations that are dangerous is completely different. Like the one I laid on the bed this morning before I had to go in to the school and held him up above my head, like above my body, which is not that far off the bed, but he got scared and grabbed a hold of me and like, "Dad, don't do that," you know? And then I was like, "Oh, it's fine. Be brave," or whatever. And put your arms out, you know, like an airplane or whatever we're talking. But he got scared, where the other one, I can hold him up there. No problem. Because he's not scared. He doesn't know that, man, I could fall. And so, but that's because over time, the one has realized from falling himself and tripping and doing all this stuff that when he's high off the ground, and if he falls, it's going to hurt. And so what happens when shooting is it's a similar deal where physiologically, like, we're going to react to this big explosion happening in front of our face. And I've talked about this before where I feel like a suppressor might mitigate that a little bit, but it's a big movement too, right? It's a huge movement where our eye has to like catch up and try to find where the target's at. And you want to, and it's almost like your desire to see where the bullet goes sometimes even makes that worse because you're having to like make this big reaction. And so, and you want to control the recoil to be able to see where the bullet goes. So you're like, your body, like as soon as the gun goes off, it makes all these reactions and you don't even know that they're happening. And in fact, the more that you shoot, the worse it gets. So you're going to react more and more and more the more you shoot because your body knows what's coming. So you got this big old explosion happening in front of your face and you're wanting to see where the bullet goes. And so by doing this, your body starts to make these reactions, and a lot of them start happening long before the shot is even gone. And because if they do these things, it might be able to see them better or whatever, you know, you'll see this. And in other disciplines like archery, like pistol, it's exacerbated more than it is in our game. But we're talking about, you know, matches now being won by 1 or 2 points or whatever, and, you know, targets getting smaller. So you're having to shoot more perfectly. You're having to shoot better all the time. And you want to give yourself the most forgiveness possible. And so making a perfect trigger pull is going to be one of those things. And so the way to overcome this reaction is that if you just put that on autopilot, so if you just put yourself on autopilot, the more you shoot, the worse you're going to get. You're going to get to this point where your body reacts to the recoil, to the coming explosion, shall we call it, right, that you will inevitably react to. If you put it on autopilot, it just is what it is. It's not something that you can just like magically stop the reaction of your body, because it kind of needs to react. It just needs to react after the bullet leaves the barrel. It almost needs to react, and I hesitate to say that because it almost needs to react, but it still doesn't, right? But it you just got to be able to control the reaction. So how do we do it? Well, if you put it on autopilot, it's immediately out of your control, and it's not something that you can really train to just say, "Nah, I'm not going to do that," because your body will do it because it just is what it is. You will react. It's like saying that if you don't think about it, you won't flinch to somebody punching you in the face or whatever, you know? Like, no, like the only way that you could possibly not flinch is by thinking about it. So, point is, So what do we got to do to be able to train that to where you make a perfect trigger pull every time? And my thing is, it's really easy, and I've talked to Brady about this, and Brady's going to call here in, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes. And so I might get to a place where we stop, and then we talk to him about this. But I just wanted to preface it so we can kind of just, so when I talk to him, it's more meaningful and we can just jump right in. But one of the things I did talk to him about is he says when it's slow, when like matches are, you know, you feel like you have a bunch of time, there's not a lot of movement and all that, it's really easy to pay attention more to your trigger. And I found this is I'll teach guys what I mean by this. I've taught a few guys now on like what I do to consciously think about the trigger, because I feel like you have to consciously think about it all the time. Is so, and I'll just tell you what I do. So I, when I'm shooting, I write. So I like figure out, I already know what I'm doing. Like when I talk about the efficiency, so I'm between shots, I'm not thinking about where to move this bag or that, unless I need to, like if I have to move this, go grab the tripod or do something like that. But I'm not really thinking about like moving. I just know where the next position is and I got to dial to this or whatever, but I don't have to think about it a lot. There's not a lot of thought exchange on that. So I have freed up this processing CPU, shall we say, this processing capacity to be able to think about where the last round went. Cause it's like almost like when the round goes off and it's like there's two snapshots in my brain. When the gun goes boom, where was the reticle? And then the next snapshot is I watch until the round hits the ground and then I put my reticle back on the target depending on how far, like if the reticle just hit the target or missed by just a little bit, then I'll just take a snapshot of where the round was in my brain type thing. And then I run the bolt and then I'll put the crosshair back where it was on the first snapshot I talked about. And then I'll think, then it's like I overlay those two images. So it's like I have the first snapshot of my brain and I replicate that with my reticle. And then I think about where the round went. And then I look at my reticle and okay, that was it. I was holding a quarter and that hit at 5/10. And then I just jump over half or to put 5/10 on the center of the target, pull the trigger. And then same thing. I snapshot goes, where was that? Where was the crosshair? And then the next snapshot, where'd the bullet go? Okay. The bullet went or hit a little bit left to center. I see where that was. So I go back, I run the bolt, come back, put the half mil in the middle of the target. I think about where last round was. And I just move my reticle to where that is, pull the trigger again, same thing, but snapshot where the reticle was, snapshot where the round hits the target, then I run my bolt, put my thing back on it. I mean, that's the simple way of doing it. Now, sometimes when it misses by a lot, I can't do it like that. Then I immediately got to go back because I feel like, okay, I know where the reticle was, so I just immediately go back. But it missed by so far, that snapshot is like, I feel like the snapshot's harder to make because I got the target here. I was focusing on the target here. I need to discern where that round was quickly. It was way off the target, so I got to make these deals. A lot of times that doesn't happen until you're shooting these long, long troop lines of where that happens. So anyway, so that snapshot, so we're just talking about that. But like those are things that happen almost unconsciously. There's a little bit of conscious effort that goes into that, obviously. But there's something that happens in between there, just before those two snapshots happen. And that is 100% conscious, okay, where all of a sudden I decided where my wind should be. So like I talked about there, say I saw where I need to put my reticle, so I put my reticle there. As soon as I put my reticle there and my natural point of aim's good, it's and I also am holding the wind that I need to hold, all that type of stuff, then I think in my mind level, and so I level my gun, which a lot of times with this Brandt built deal, which if you guys don't know what that is, it's a way to be able to put the Brandt built is like this little thing that goes on your housing, which you look it up, Brandt built's the name. It goes on your ocular housing of your scope and it runs the send it level lights to your ocular housing. So it's always in your dominant eye. So that's kind of happening while this other stuff's happening now, but I still level. And then I think trigger, my finger touches the trigger. And then it's like a lot of times I'll just squeeze. And I just think squeeze, 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 boom. Okay. And it's like, and when people talk about being surprised by the trigger, because I and then people say you don't want to be surprised by the trigger. You want to know when it goes off, blah, blah, blah. Well, I don't agree with that. I think you should be surprised by the trigger every time, because I don't want my body to be allowed to react prior to the round leaving the muzzle. Okay, and it's nice in precision rifle shooting that your body can't react to the explosion if it doesn't know what's coming. It can't react until after the bullet's well long gone out of the muzzle. So because you just can't react fast enough. So if you don't know what's coming, you're good to go. But my point is that you need to be squeezing, and I know as soon as my finger touches the trigger, from the time I think squeeze and I start adding pressure, that the gun is going to go off. I already know that, right? So it's not like I'm surprised and I'm doing some sort of AD or whatever, or ND that people would maybe want to say, or something like that. No, I know the round's going to go off, and I like a light trigger because I want to know. I don't want to be like prepping the trigger, like, because there's certain people that have it to where it's like, you know, a pound or two, and I've done that, and there's no problem with it. You just got to get used to your trigger to where you prep the trigger a little bit, and then you add weight at a constant rate until the gun goes off. Like for me, I run a light trigger, so when I touch the trigger and then I think squeeze, I can add weight, and I still add weight at a very slow rate. And the reason why I do that is because my trigger is so light, so I add weight in a very, very slow rate until the gun goes boom. Okay, there's an easy, like, a lot of people, I feel like, though, they think shoot, and then they press the trigger. It's a trigger press where it's just like boom, you know, and then they know the gun goes off, and I don't know how to explain it. It's like you think now in your mind. You'll just be like, you're wobbling and you're like, my thing's there, and you boom, now. And I've done that before, and I've done that in the past where that was my main way to pull the trigger, and I know that. And I used to think that was a good trigger pull because I was pressing the trigger and didn't seem to affect my accuracy, but it did for sure. And I know people that I've seen videos and I've heard people talk about it where they're like, you have to do that. You just need to know when the gun's going off, so you just gotta boom, you know, press boom and figure out how fast or how hard you can press it before affecting your accuracy and all that stuff. And I don't think that that's the way that we want to, in my opinion, this is all my opinion. I will say that there are times where you might have to do that, like if the time's running out and all that type of stuff. But I try to make sure that situation never happens, right? To where I can always make a good press by hurrying in between positions, running my bolt fast, doing all these other things, and then making a shift. And I'm telling you right now, that shift that I talk about is the hardest thing. To be able to when I think in my mind, I think level trigger, and as soon as my finger touches the trigger, it's 100% conscious thought. There's no thinking about the reticle. There's no thinking about the wobble. There's nothing. All it is, I'm looking at the toot, looking at the target. I'm looking at the reticle, but I'm in my brain, all I'm thinking about is just squeeze, squeeze, boom. And I've made, and that takes a lot of practice to be able to do that. And then wait until you see, and then it's like freeze. Now you freeze and wait till the round hits the target, because now we're talking about follow through. Wait till the round hits the target. And you don't want to react in a way, like in my mind, I just want to catch the rifle. So like I see a lot of people, and it's easy to see. You'll watch videos. You watch these videos of people through the scope and stuff, and they'll make these, they'll move it back to the middle. They'll move their rifle back to the middle because it's easy to do that when you know the round's coming. And the other thing is it takes longer for your rifle to settle when that happens. But if you get in this habit where you just, it's like squeeze, squeeze, boom, you don't know the round's coming off, but you're in a position that allows for the rifle just to come back and stop really quick. So it just come back and stops. So the reticle just goes up and stops, you know? So, you know, like I'll hear people say, oh, I don't have any recoil, but they do. And then it just goes up and stops and whatever. But here's Brady calling. But anyways, to finish that thought is you really just had to have 100% conscious thought in that moment in order to not react. So here's Brady. Hey Brady, it's Morgan. I'm already recording. So,
Oh, what's up?
oh,
Okay.
I figured I'd get on here and kind of preface what we're going to talk about. So, what I'm talking about now is my thoughts. When me and you've talked about this a lot, on trigger control, where I feel like you need to get to a place where everything you do is unconscious except for pulling the trigger.
Yeah.
And one of the things I want to talk about with you is you talked about before, whatever we were going to do a podcast and we were just talking about it real quick, is you said it was in Texas. So recently you went to Texas to the shoot down there, and you said in Texas you felt like you made good trigger pulls, but you felt like it was easier. We lost him, but he felt like it was easier to do because he hold on, we're gonna get back on there. I lost him for a second.
All right, we're good. I can hear
Yeah, so you felt like it was easier to do because you had more time there or something like that.
Yeah, you had, I mean, it was just so much more laid back than, I'm not a great 90 second shooter. I'll come straight out and say that. I get rushed easy, and when I'm rushed, I make bad trigger pulls. Down there, I mean, as everybody's heard, targets were a little bigger. It was very laid back, pretty straightforward match. It was fun. I still had fun. But it made it to where I could really focus on like things that needed to be focused on, like pulling the trigger, more so than worrying about just getting through a stage. It was just, yeah, easier than, I mean, that was the first match I had shot since the AG Cup in the finale, and I didn't shoot good at either one of those. So it was quite the difference in matches just from one to the other. And one was one of the hardest matches of the year I've shot, and the other was about as easy as I've shot. So it's, yeah, not being rushed at that match made it to where you could focus on making good trigger pulls and really focus on where the bullet hits. And I mean, that's a flaw that I have, is I'm, when it comes to 90 second stages, I have a rough time for whatever reason.
So, and I was talking before you got on here, I did talk about well, it was unconscious competence and conscious competence and all this stuff, and how like I likened it to driving a stick shift, right? That when you start driving a stick shift, you get to where like you start, you have no idea what's going on. You don't even know whether or not you can do it or you can't do it. And then pretty soon, and that's just what I call unconscious incompetence. So you don't know what you don't know. And then all of a sudden you get in there, you pop the clutch once, and you're like, wow, I suck. Now you know, now it's just conscious incompetence. So now you know that you suck. And then somebody says, well, slowly let out the clutch and add a little gas to it, and then it'll work. And then they're like, okay, so that now you're consciously competent, and so now you slowly let out the clutch, and then you're driving. So now you're consciously competent. You have to really think about it. But then over time, you can become unconsciously competent by doing it. Pretty soon, you don't even have to think about it. You just think it's time to go forward, at a red light or whatever. It turns green, and then you just. The car starts
Becomes
going
second
forward.
nature.
Yeah, there's no nothing. But I also say that's there's the trigger pulls is the one thing that you cannot do that to. That if you do that, like I think everything in shooting needs to be except for the trigger pull, pretty much
Subconscious.
needs to be subconscious. Like to be really elite, you need to allow yourself the time to be able to think about all this other stuff, which obviously, processing is a conscious thing, but the actual fire control
Doing it.
sequence
Yes.
that needs to be conscious, because the only thing that ha by making that unconscious, like an unconscious movement or whatever, moving it to there, like you need to just keep that in the conscious category, because if you don't, you're just going to get really good at reacting. Your body is just going to get really efficient at reacting to an explosion, to this big movement, this thing, if that makes any sense. So then you make bad habits. And I feel like that there's this point where where it's when you have more time, and tell me if you agree, if you have more time, you have it allows you the time to be able to think about the shot. But as soon as the time gets tight, now you move back into this place,
Yes.
and the stress goes up, and now all of a sudden, pretty soon, you start going into this area where you fall back into this unconscious habit of making the gun go off.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it doesn't matter. I mean, even if it's 2 minute stages, and I think for the most part, there's a few of you guys that I don't think it ever really matters. You guys always seem to be fine, but I would say even just most really good shooters and definitely just regular guys, anytime anything gets stressful, if you're worried about timing out or like any type of, well, yeah, mainly timing out, you'll see some guys who I don't think slap the trigger very often start slapping the triggers. And I mean, guys will turn around and admit it a lot of times. I don't think that's anything to do with, I mean, I think a mentally strong person can get away and just be like, nope, I don't care if I time out type of thing. Or just go fat, like you're good at going faster and still making a good trigger pull no matter what. I'm not.
Yeah, so I think there's two categories of people. I think there's pe and I don't want to use names because I don't want people listening to be like, "Hey, you said this about me," or whatever. But I think there's a lot of people, and I think this is the most of the people. I don't think there's very many people that do what I do, and I'm not saying, oh, that's the best way to do it. I'm just saying there's people that are they just have a cadence of this is the way that I shoot. So when the so they can speed up a lot of stuff, but they just like they close the bolt at this rate, and then they finger touches the trigger, and then the gun goes boom, and they always do that, and they get this process of doing that down to where that's so where to where. And then they're super efficient in their movements. Like if they got to move like in between positions or whatever, they're super efficient in their movements. But then they but the, every time that they're like on the gun running it, it's like they go back to the same movement, and they accept the fact that they're gonna that if it's 90 seconds and it's 16 positions, they're probably gonna time out, and that's totally fine. And I've gotten there a little bit, but I've tried to figure out a way to so I think that's what the most of the really good guys like. I will say Jake Vibber, like that's what he does a lot of times. You watch him, he'll time out
Oh yeah.
sometimes, but I
But
feel
every trigger pull was a good one.
yeah, and it's always the same. The way he runs the bolts the same, the way he does everything's the same, all of that. Whereas I feel like I've isolated the trigger control part of it to where I'm able to run the bolt fast in between shots. I'm able to run the bolt fast going into it. I can speed up everything except for as soon as a finger touches the trigger. Now it's just go to that process. And I'm not going to say, well, I in my opinion, obviously, I think the way that's better because it's more dynamic, but I 100% know it's harder to get to the point, that point, than just developing your cadence.
Yeah, I mean, it I think it depends on the match a little bit too. We talked about I shot a match this weekend that was, we call it the Paul Dallin matches. There, you can just pretty well guarantee there's going to be a stage or two, if not multiple, that you could have 3 minutes and it might still be not really, but 2 minutes on some of them is still. And I
Ridiculous.
tried. I mean, yeah. I mean, this was a local match, and I told myself I'm going to make good trigger pulls. And I know for sure there was a couple that I definitely. And it's just, I mean, I didn't even care about really. I mean, I wanted to win for sure, but I just wanted to have a good practice session really. And I still, like, no matter what I do, I still get rushed and punch the trigger. And yeah, you guys that don't do that are just.
Well, like I say, I feel like there's a way around it. Like you just have to change your like you have to get to this place where that's what you isolate, right? Like I was talking, me and Brian Neese were practicing, and the way he does it or the way he'd done it in the past was like I say, when he had the time to do it, he would make a good trigger pull. But then, as things got faster, though, that's what I was trying to say. As things got faster, everything got proportionally faster. Does this make sense? So like, if he was slow, everything was slow. Like getting into the position was slow, putting the bag on there was slow. closing the bolt maybe was slow, and then touching the trigger, and the trigger was slow and probably perfect. But then all of a sudden, when you had to get faster, everything got faster, including the trigger. Yeah. And I feel
and
like that's
trigger should stay the same.
Yeah, that's where I feel like people have this issue is they don't realize that like the Jake Vibberts of the world, he has that he has a cadence and he knows there's a speed where you just don't go faster than this speed. And if you don't go faster than this speed, if you just know this is my top end, you put this governor on yourself to where you can go slower than it, but you can't go faster than it, and then that will make it to where you always make good trigger pulls. That's not a bad way to do it. There's a lot of guys that do it that way and do it really well.
Yep.
I just feel like there's a way to you have to extract the trigger control sequence from your shooting process and make it to where that you separate those and you have to separate those in a very real sense, and you have to do that mentally, and to mentally separate it is huge. Like, it's super
hard.
It
is. It's hard. It's hard. I have a very hard time with it. I mean, all the time. And that's been my number one thing is trigger control. I have had some terrible matches, and I know it's just because I'm just punching the trigger. I'm getting complacent with my entire shot sequence and process to where it can make or break a weekend, that's for sure.
Yeah. And I think the extraction process, like the ability, like that's been my biggest struggle with teaching a few different people, just like trying to show them what I do. Cause like I started to realize that I needed to do this to separate the two processes out to really, it's not separating the two processes. It's a matter of just extracting the actual making the gun go boom. That part process needed to be pulled out. And so that I could hurry everything, and then this process here would not proportionately get smaller. That as everything else gets faster, the trigger stays the same. So I might look like I'm hauling, and then I just stop right there, and then the gun goes off, and then when I see the round hit the target, then all of a sudden I go back to the fast mode, and that I feel like is that's hard, and to be able to do it, I've tried to come up with different drills, but I don't know which one makes a difference, or if it's just that I'm not very good at explaining what I mean to people.
No, I think it's just hard to do. In general, I mean, I've shot with you a lot. I mean, you've taught me a lot. That's something I have tried my hardest to just. And I don't know why it seems to go away. Like, there's times, I mean, I feel any match I've shot real good at, I think I've done the whole, my entire shot sequence is fast, smooth, everything looks good, and I'm making just good, nice, even trigger pulls, no matter how fast I need to go or slow I need to go. But then, I'm trying to think of how to explain it exactly, but it's hard for people to grasp. Like, they might grasp it for a little bit, and then I think people just get complacent and continue to – they'll go back to their old habits. It's hard to keep – I don't even know how – like, I shoot a lot, and I still have a hard time keeping that habit good.
Yeah, I'm not going to say I'm perfect at it. Like, obviously, there's times where I don't do it as good. I think the best drill that I've found that I felt like – and it was with Brian Neese. I'm using him as an example because it's the most recent and I feel like the best example of actually watching somebody get it. And it's just because we practice together. And then I hate telling like a grown man what to do. So it's like always uncomfortable. Like when I'm practicing with somebody and they don't ask for advice. And then it's like, and then I just start telling them things to do. I feel really bad about it. But I guess not too bad because I keep doing it. But anyways... Well, yeah.
You consistently beat us, so there's probably a reason to it.
I don't know. But we were sitting there doing some drills, and I do a lot of one-shot and two-shot drills, mainly one-shot drills when I practice, but I now have seen the need to do two-shot drills because of watching this. But the one-shot drills, what I would do, and I thought this was really good, is I feel like you need to – like so I set a timer on my I set two timers. I set one at 5 seconds and one at 10 seconds or something like that. Or I think what I think what I did is I did a 5 second delay and a 5 second par time. And so what I would do is I would tell him, okay, so you as soon as I say shooter ready, go, I'll push the button, but you need to be with your you need to have your finger touching the trigger by the time the actual par time goes off. But then you don't allow the gun to go boom. Now like what I would do is I would actually, so I'm on target with my bolt closed, finger touches the trigger, and it's usually like you're rushing to even get to there, like that's tough. On the positions that we were doing and to be on the target, and then it's like end level and ready to go, like so now. And so you're ready the next step is to start adding pressure to the trigger, and so you're like hauling butt to get to that point, and then it would be like, okay, so then what I would do is I would close my eyes, take my finger off the trigger, and then put my finger back on the trigger. So it's like so it's like you're like, okay, now I'm done. That was the job, is to get to the trigger, you know?
Yeah.
Telling my brain that that's what it was. And I know that sounds like weird and redundant, but it's like, now, like mentally, sometimes little things like that you got to do. And then when the beep went off, now I would say, okay, now start the squeeze process and just like do an over-exaggerated squeeze, because that process always under stress will shorten a little bit.
Oh yeah. And it's hard. Like, you don't realize how fast you can feel like your finger's been on the trigger for 3 seconds and it's been on the trigger for a half a second.
Oh yeah.
It's a weird feeling.
Like a full second trigger pull is so hard for people.
That's a lot. Yeah.
A full second trigger pull is like, for people, it feels like an eternity. And I'm like, dude, that's not even that long. And so, like, you ask somebody to do one for 2 seconds, they're like,
oh, it feels like forever.
People can't even, it's like, it's almost like you can't do it. So there's a mental block. And it's not that you can't do it, because physically you can do it. 100% you can do it. It's just, what is stopping you? The only thing stopping you is your own mind. And so telling your mind, like, shut up, I'm just going to do this, squeeze, 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 boom. Not just going through this. It's easy to slip in, and when you start doing things like this, it shows you how much we've programmed our brains to just do it automatic. We just say, okay, boom, you know, the gun, it's there, boom. And I feel like the longer you've done it and the more you've done it, the harder it is to untrain it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Especially if you've consistently been doing it a certain way. I mean, if you've been shooting for 3 or 4 years and you're consistently doing these quick, super quick trigger pulls, it's pretty hard to train out.
Yeah, because you hear people talk about, oh, you need to be able to get the round off in 10 seconds in one-shot drills, and that's all you focus on. Well, then you get these people that are just like, or 7 seconds. Then you get people that are just trying to get the round off in 7 seconds, and boy, you can do that. Like, no problem. like you can just get rounds off and hit the target and hit small targets somewhat consistently, but not nowhere near as consistently as if you – is if you have it to where you're making perfect trigger pulls.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's a hard thing to, I don't know. It's not hard for some people, I know, but.
I think it's hard for everybody.
You think?
Yeah. I think this is the hardest thing, period.
I mean, Jake did tell me the one time, he's like, I had to dry fire for ever to get to where I stopped punching. But he's like, I did whatever I had to do to stop rushing or punching the trigger, and now I just don't do it.
Yeah, I think now he just figured out, like, this is the speed in which I can go to where I don't crunch the trigger. Like, I don't mash it. Like, and dry fire, I think, can help, but it won't help a large enough degree. It could, because the next thing that I did with, say, Brian, is Brian got good at that, right? Like, it's like, okay, I gotta get on there. So he was hurrying to do that. So this is where I feel like this is the hardest part. Because this is either going to show you, because what happens is he's in a hurry to get to 5 seconds, right? But then he can stop, right? Because I tell him, like, the timer says, okay, I'm done, you know? But now I say, okay, so now the job is you want to maintain that same cadence. You want to be able to get in the position as fast as you can. And I just put a 10-second timer on or whatever, no big deal. But the idea was is to get in the position that is the exact same speed. And this is the interesting part. As I watch somebody do this, I say, okay, just get in the position and the exact same speed and then slow your trigger down the same that you did on the other one. And, you know, and so what I see happen is guys immediately slow down. They slow down their getting into the position.
Yeah.
They slow down to a nonchalant pace almost, because then now they know they're not trying to beat a 5-second timer, and then they close the bolt and they make a perfect trigger pull the way I said to do it. But now it's like, well, okay, that didn't work. So then I'm like, dude, you gotta maintain the same speed. So it's like now I did this. So, and you don't want to. And yeah, it's kind of hard to explain. But so then I'm like, I do that and I say that and. Then people go back to like, then the round goat leaves the barrel at like 550 after I tell them, okay, well you need to maintain that speed. Yeah. So it's like, so now, or 530 or something like that. It's just like immediately they send the round. So, cause now they're thinking, oh, I got to go fast. So now it's like, as soon as a trigger finger touches the trigger though, it's like, boom, the gun goes off. And I'm like, yeah. Okay, yeah. You can't do that. And so now it's like, you need to figure out a way to, as soon as the trigger finger touches the trigger, now it's a completely different thing where we slow down. And so yeah. It's like you have to have these two exaggerations of like really go fast and then really go slow on the trigger. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Well, in a sequence, like there's a lot of times I talk to myself as I go, like, I mean, you've said it before, level trigger squeeze, any of that type of stuff, just something to remind me, okay, once I'm here, I got to slow down, and I mean, I do that a lot just to stop me from punching the trigger. Yeah. I do it with my bow too, and we talked about archery earlier, and yeah, that has made me a way better archery shot.
Yeah. Oh, I think, yeah, because the best part is when we did this with me and Brian, and I might talk to Brian, I might have Brian come on just so we can talk about that, because I think it's super interesting hearing people's thoughts about it, and I want to have him talk about that experience. But the next thing we did is I said, okay, let's do a two-shot drill. And the two-shot drill was go fast, make a perfect trigger pull. Then as soon as you see where the round hits, run the bolt as fast as you can and then get back there and make another perfect trigger pull. And what was so funny is he missed both of those shots. Is the first one. He just goes in there and he gets into position, does a perfect trigger pull on that first one. And then he runs a bolt as fast as he can. And as soon as his finger touches the trigger, boom. And he's like, I was thinking about was running the bolt fast. He says, I did not see that first round go. And I says, well, you put them both in the same hole, right to the right of the target. He's like, I didn't see the first round hit the target or nothing. I didn't see that first round. He says, I just remember my finger touching the trigger on the next one. And it went boom. And then I thought, well, that definitely didn't work. It was like funny because the first shot was like at seven or 8 seconds, and the second shot, like his split was like 250 or 230 or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was like 2.5 seconds, and I was like, well, that was definitely. And then he's like, all right, I know what I did. He says, but I understand what you're saying now. He says, because I get it. He's like, I get it now, because it was like watching his whole mind click, because he went, holy crap. I really do need to figure out. He's like, I can't separate them right now.
Yeah.
And that realization, I think, did more than anything, because then all of a sudden it was immediate after that. He went, he all of a sudden he would go, he would get into position like with urgency. There was urgency in what he was doing. And then he would close the bolt, make a good trigger pull, watch the round hit the target, run the bolt really fast, get back on the trigger, and then separate it out. And I was like, okay, so that's what you need to do. But then a matter of doing that enough to where when all, so like I'm telling him, I'm trying to put stress on him saying, you need to get into position in 5 seconds, saying, you know, so there's somebody there saying that, but like in a match, there's a whole nother level of stress. So you kind of got to do enough to where you can separate it out there too. Does that make any sense? I know that was a long.
Yeah, no, everything we're talking about is basically getting to the same meaning, is it's hard and you got to figure it out and it'll help you. But I think even just talking about it, or when you go to the range and practice, really focus on it, and you'll realize how quick you don't have trigger control down as much as you think you do.
Yeah. It's amazing to me, and it's hard. I think having somebody watch you helps. Having somebody run a timer and that type of stuff, it helps.
Yeah.
But
Shot timers definitely help.
What's helped you?
Depends on the mass. Sometimes I'm not sure I have acted like I've got any help at some points, but just shooting with you has helped me over time. But like right now I'm driving to the range to go shoot, and I have 32 rounds. Today is solely just because I know I punched a trigger this weekend. Two shot drills were my thing today. I'm just going to run two shot drills and just make sure every trigger pull is that nice same length, whether it's 1 to 2 second type trigger pull, or even if I start punching, I'll go longer. And my big thing is I'll get on target and I'm like, okay, I'm in the zone. And I try and consciously pull it, but there's times that doesn't always work out.
Yeah, it's funny because you want to go, well, my reticle's there. I want the gun to go off now. And so then it just goes, boom. And it's like, I talked about that earlier too. I'm like, I don't know that that's, I think you want to be.
It's not a good thing.
Yeah, you want to be like surprised. I think you need to slowly just, you need to know the gun's going to go off within, you know, a half a second to 2 seconds after you start adding weight. But you need to not know when in that time span that it's going to go off.
Yeah, you need to know your fingers on the trigger, but you also need to not know exactly for sure when it's going to go off. And I know people don't agree with that. I think that's the way it needs to be. I'll turn my trigger up, and I almost always shoot worse if I turn it up too high, because then I'm almost anticipating, okay, it's getting pretty heavy, should be going. Whereas when it's a little lighter, I'm not saying you need to go too light, I'm just saying a little lighter. Light enough you can have your finger on it, but not too light that you even think about touching it, it goes off. But being able to rest your finger on the trigger and having that conscious, okay, it's on the trigger, focus on the target, and then it goes as you're doing that focusing point, I feel like that helps.
Yeah, it's like you don't want it to be so heavy that it takes a long time, right? Because then you get in this place where you're like, okay, it's got to go now.
Yep.
I think the lighter trigger lets you go, okay, I know it's going to go off in the next second if I just add, boom, you know?
Yep.
And then you can be surprised in a decent amount of time it doesn't take a long time to do it, you know? Or get to where you're really good at prepping the trigger, and that's so hard.
It is hard. I don't as much anymore, but for a while I was messing with my trigger weight a lot just because at one point I knew I had it too light. I just, like, it was one of the, I mean, you love a light trigger. I like a light trigger, but I can't go too light because then I'm like, I hate the, if I even think about putting any pressure, maybe it's just the way I react to things. I don't know. But when I had it too light, I definitely was shooting worse on a consistent basis. And ever since I've turned it up, I don't even know exactly what it's at, but like I said, to where it can be that nice, you can rest your finger on it, but as soon as you start applying pressure, it's going to go. And that's different for everybody.
Yeah, it's different. And I think it has maybe to do a little bit with how much nerve endings you have in your finger or whatever, you know?
Yeah, that could be.
Because I know Paul Higley, like, he runs a lighter trigger, but he can't run the same trigger as me, or he'll just, like, he would never know when the gun's going to go off because he'd never know that he touched the trigger.
Yeah.
Because it's just, like, he puts his finger in the trigger guard, and some point, unbeknownst to him, the gun goes off. Whereas if he runs, you know, a 10-ounce trigger or whatever, then he can put it, then he can touch it, and then squeeze, boom. Whereas for me, I can run a lot lighter. And then some people, you got to run even heavier, you know, like a full pound or something like that. And people are going to be like, wow, you guys are running super light triggers. There's no way you're not just slapping them. And it's like, no, the reason why I run a light trigger is so that I can touch it. And then I squeeze, boom. And the time that I have to squeeze to be surprised is a very short amount of time. But I over-exaggerated in practice.
Yeah, you do like to over-exaggerate it in practice. We've done that a lot, and it's hard to. People should just go out and try and hold your finger in the middle of your shot sequence. Hold your trigger on, or hold your finger on the trigger for 3 seconds per shot. You'll have a real tough time doing
Yeah,
it.
have somebody like actually time you and just like just do what you think is a slow trigger pull and just see how long it
Yes.
is.
And video it if you have to, because it's like nothing.
It's like even say out loud, just like I'm gonna start now, you know, or something like that, you know, and then all of a sudden just time how long it was from when you said now or like I'm gonna start to when the gun goes off, and you'll be appalled at yourself.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. Oh,
It
you did it to me the one day. I think you had videoed me, and it was
probably.
like my finger touched the trigger, and I was like, oh, that's easily 2 seconds. I don't even think it was a full second.
Probably not. 'Cause like, yeah,
I mean, it was
you
like,
think it's just like you're like, "Oh yeah, this is forever."
yeah,
And I don't know
it's
what it
weird.
is. I think it's because we're trying to aim so much.
I was gonna say, I think there's just so much going on in your head that you don't realize that it seems like, I mean, it's just like people talk about, oh, it seemed like an eternity with anything, whatever you want to talk about, like a car wreck or whatever. It seemed like it was forever. And it was like 12 seconds of a car wreck, but it seemed like it took a half hour type of
Oh yeah, and well, and this goes back to natural point of aim. I talked about this earlier too, before you hopped on there. Natural point of aim is one of those things where you need to trust your natural point of aim. You need to get good at it
Yeah.
because you need to be able to just squeeze. And if say your target's the size of, or your wobble's the size of the target, you need to not be trying to make it go off right now. You know what I mean? Because
Yeah, you can't
what
time
happens is your say it's the reticle's in the center now. By the time your body finally says now and then the gun goes off, it's probably at the
it.
bottom of the target or the top of the target. Whereas if you see it at the extreme, so it's on the edge, by the time the gun goes off, like the next movement, it's not at the edges for very long. It's always in the middle longer than it's at the edges. So if you see it at an edge and it goes off, like you think you shot it at an edge, probably good chance it's inside of that edge because you're always subconsciously moving it back to the middle. Is that if that
And
makes
I'm
any
sure,
sense?
yeah. And I'm sure people have noticed, like, I mean, there's been times, it may have happened this weekend, I think I remember. You're like, all right, gun goes off, and you're like, oh, I don't know about that. And it hits. It's probably because your natural point of aim was good. Subconsciously, everything was there, really. But you're not trying to really, okay, it's not in the center type of deal. I think.
I think so too. I think that's a lot. I think people, you just got to get really good where you trust that because, and I think that's maybe what seems like it's so long is you're sitting there watching this wobble and you're wanting the gun to go off every time it ticks the middle of that target. But yet instead you need to sit there and just slowly pull the trigger until the gun goes off and trust that your natural point of aim and that of doing that will work.
Yes.
And
And
so
a bow will teach you that as much as anything, because I don't know anybody that can hold a bow dead steady, other than maybe some real top level pros. But I shoot in my yard all summer long, and that is one thing you want to talk about. I'm not sure how you can shoot as good of a group as you can, and it's a subconscious thing, because I'll shoot tiny little groups with my bow at 50, 60, and 70 yards.
But your trigger needs to be conscious, right?
Yeah, your trigger needs to be cautious for sure. But when you look at the amount of movement you have through your peep to your sight, and you're like, how did I just shoot a group like that? That's how a rifle's the same way. So anybody that shoots a bow, I would think, will kind of get this pretty well. But
Yeah. But it's a matter of like doing that in a rifle and like having that happen every time. Like that's maybe one thing I
Yes.
would think with you. Since how you do shoot a bow and you can do that group, like you need to figure out in my if I was to say something to you, which here I am anyways, so doing what I said earlier, is I would say that you gotta figure out how to do that exact thing with a rifle every time, regardless
Yes.
of the speed in which you're going on the stage.
Yep.
Just be able to do that. And it's easier to do it faster, I think, with a rifle because you don't have to manage all of that wobble.
Oh yeah, and I mean, also with a bow, I'm shooting in my yard and there's no time going on. Like, there's a lot that goes into it's a lot harder when you've got a clock running, you've got people watching you want to win. There's a lot more that goes into it with a rifle for sure. Granted, when you're shooting an animal, but I seem to be a lot more calm when I'm hunting.
Yeah, but I
Yeah,
feel like
shoot rifle range.
once you get to that point where that's what you know you have to do, then in that
Yeah.
moment, and this is what I think helps, and it's like that, I think that's one of the things when people are like, man, that guy's got ice water in his veins. No,
Yep.
this is what he has. This is what he's figured out. This is the type of
Yeah.
things that get him there, is because they know what they have to do, and they know what needs to be unconscious, what needs to be or subconscious, what needs to be conscious. And then that's the things they think about. They don't do anything extra either.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
I tend to agree a lot. I know that. Love the yaz out of me. But I
You're.
think it's a good subject.
No, I think it is too. I think it's one. Well, it's one that I always am trying. It's the thing that I'm always practicing, right? That's the only thing I really practice. I mean, because if you do that. Like, I don't know. Maybe I think it's the hardest thing to do, and so that's why I'm always practicing
I
it.
think so.
Yeah.
That's my main thing I focus on. Like, I feel like I can build a position pretty good, pretty quick most of the time. I might be a little inefficient in some spots. I try and work on them, but I do know that trigger pulls cause more misses than you. I don't know. I mean, I guess unless you're really slow and you're timing out with five shots every stage, but I'd rather time out with one shot left than miss three because of a bad trigger pull.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I think ends up happening, you know? I
Yeah.
see people like they all of a sudden have to hurry, and so then they send three rounds down range as fast as they can. They miss every one of them, don't see where they went or
Because
nothing.
they don't even pay attention. Yeah.
Yep. It's because instead of speeding up everything except for this little one little spot, you can pull that out, because people think it takes forever. And it's like, well, the difference between a good trigger pull and a bad trigger pull is, and like doing your process. Like, it's a difference between a half a second and 1 to 1.5 seconds. But the
Yep.
difference between going slow in everything else and going fast in everything else is like, I mean, that's the difference. Like, just the difference in closing your bolt when you, as soon as you look through your scope. So, like, having your gun, being able to put your gun on the target, and then as soon as your face touches the stock, your bolt's closed.
Close your bolt. Yeah.
Versus getting on target, then closing the bolt, and then getting ready. That's a on average, when I watch people do that, that's a 2 second delay. So.
Oh, yeah. That was my big issue at the beginning. I would get on target, get all like everything steady, and then I'd close my bolt and I'd have to reset anyway. So, I mean, there was times I think it was 3 to 5 seconds
Yeah,
that it was
it's
adding.
longer than people think, and they think they're going fast, right? Because they're like they're doing
Yeah.
everything super fast, and they do that, and then they slap the trigger because they like gotta go fast, or the cost of not having good target acquisition out here in the West is
Yeah.
immense. And so,
Oh,
like, if
yeah.
you can get those little things dialed in, you give yourself so much, you buy yourself so much time on the trigger, to where instead of
Yep.
only putting a half a second on that. Just like subconsciously, that's just what you put on it, you know, is a half second or less, to all of a sudden putting it, extending that to a half a second to a second and a half, you know, or let's just call it a second. You're only losing a half a second per shot. So 5 seconds per stage versus doing all these other things. You can make up 5 seconds per stage somewhere else, no problem. Like, that's
Oh, yeah.
easy.
Yeah, target acquisition out here is definitely a lot of people's main issue.
Oh man, it's so hard out here.
It is hard. I had a rough time on one stage this weekend. I kept losing the target because it was in the cedar trees. It didn't matter what I knew where it was. It just you look through your scope and all you can see is cedar trees, and you got to find it at the base of one of them. That's hard on people.
Do you think it's worth putting a red dot on your gun?
I don't know. I mean, I've never used one, so I guess I can't say, but Paul loves them. He's like, that thing's one of my favorite things I have on my gun.
I could see how it could be freaking awesome, actually.
I'm sure it would help. I mean, I try and just do the line it up over the top of the scope and come down, and most of the time it's there. We're lucky enough that, I mean, shooting out here, you either get good at it or you're not going to ever do very good at a lot of these Western matches. So it doesn't really matter. So you got to just train yourself to be good at it. But I think if you have a tough time finding targets, I think it would help.
You know what I think I want to do? I want to, and I don't know, I probably shouldn't say, but I just want to figure out, like, I think the red dot's a good thing to do. I think there's other things that could be done to make that also a pretty efficient thing. So, but no, I think that this is a huge, or this right here makes, well, it's the reason why some of the other things need to be done, you know? So, yeah, no.
I think so.
Yeah, it's interesting. Where are you headed to match-wise next?
Snake River match with you
Yep.
here in 2 weeks, which will be a blast. I'm excited.
I'm pretty excited for that match.
Starting to warm up a little bit, which I say that and it's supposed to snow for like the next 5 days, but it was like 18 degrees last week and today it's 37, so it's a little bit nicer.
Yeah, that's nice.
It was real nice this weekend, both Saturday and Sunday. I shot in a hoodie all day Saturday at the press match. So it was good. It was
That's
fun.
nice.
So what's the temperatures like up there?
I don't know what is it right now. I'll tell you. It's been kind of cold. This morning wasn't bad. It's not too bad, I don't think, right now.
Because it's a little
I bet
warmer
it's
up there than it
45, I'll
is down
bet.
here,
Yeah,
isn't
it's 48.
it? Okay.
High wind warning until 10 a.m. Tuesday. So
Oh.
today's Monday, so we're gonna have high winds. And it was kind of windy. Yeah, it was kind of windy out there. It's a little chilly.
Was
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, I definitely, I think this is super important, and hopefully people kind of get what we're talking about when we do this. And I'll probably just, I'll call Brian and try to get his thoughts, and I'll just add it, tag it on the end of this. So if you're listening, don't think it's done yet. I know it's gonna be a long one, but I think it's worth the talk, shall we say.
For sure.
So,
I think a lot of people need to talk about it. I
yeah.
think there's a lot of people that don't think they have an issue that probably do.
You know, it was funny is I was worried about the length of podcasts in the beginning. And maybe some people still like hate the length of the podcast, but
Most people like long podcasts.
hey, I didn't know that, but it's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I
yeah.
remember when he started, and he's like, people were like, well, why are you stopping? So he's like, I finally just started doing 3 and 4 hour podcasts, and people love them. And now look at him. He's like the biggest podcast there is.
Oh, you're Joe Rogan?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like 3 hours usually, I think, is their average. And I think
Yeah.
that's, I mean, not that I want to go for that. I still
No,
try to
but
keep them under 2 hours.
a 20-minute podcast, I think kind of just people lose interest when they're like, oh, I'll listen to it when I get a second. Whereas a 2 hour podcast, they're like, oh, maybe I'll get some good nuggets out of this.
Yeah,
Or
100%.
even an hour.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a place for those short ones, and I think it's great. So, anyways, we're talking about that, the length of the podcast. But like, if you want to listen to them faster, if you're like me, I just listen to everything on 2x speed. So,
I know. How does
like,
that
you can
do
get
that?
through some material.
Yeah, not me.
But anyway, yeah. I don't know. Go out, try it, see what you guys think. But I really think that like this is. Once you get to a certain level, right? Like once you get everything, most of your skills that you can pushed into that unconscious competence category, or like where it's just everything is just you're doing it subconsciously. You don't have to think about it. That's what it is. I mean, it's gonna allow you to be able to think about all this other stuff and process information. Once you get to that point, though, then it's like, what do I do now to get better? I think this is where it's at.
Yep. I think it is the one thing that people want, like you said, once you've got everything else down, it's the one thing that I honestly, it doesn't really matter how good you are, it seems to be an issue for most people.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how good you are, you're gonna like, and the nice thing is mechanically, like our rifles, we can get rid of a lot of this. Like
Oh yeah.
it's true, like a heavier rifle, lighter trigger, like it's gonna get rid of some of this issue, and a lot of guys will get rid of it that way. But when you
Yeah.
get in these, but it's when we're talking about matches being by one or 2 points, yeah, I don't care what you say. Like some of these guys will make it up into the top and win some matches, but in order to consistently
Yes.
to really do it, in all scenarios, at all ranges, different positions. I think that's where I think this is what separates men from the boys.
100%. Couldn't agree more.
Well, thanks for coming on. I'll let you
no problem.
Get to the range, but yeah.
Perfect.
Hopefully, you guys get something out of the podcast, and I'll try to get Brian on to talk about our drill situation. But good luck. Have fun practicing.
Okay. Sounds good. Thanks for having me on.
Yep. Talk to you guys later. So I'm probably going to have Brian come on, and we'll talk about kind of the things we talked about with Brady, and talk about kind of what he was thinking going through it, and kind of his thoughts on it, because it's kind of cool to see the way he was able to maybe understand what I was talking about. Maybe I got my point across to him, but it'd be nice to have another perspective on it and see what he was thinking in that in while we were doing that. So I just kind of want to have him on to do that, but I'll probably do that on a separate episode, probably record it here soon and then release it fairly soon to this. But I feel like Brady and I did a decent job of hopefully presenting a problem, I guess, is and that's what I'm kind of trying to do, is present this problem of like, hey, most people, including myself, have a tough time doing this. This is really difficult. How do you get better at it? And I don't know that I got the how nailed down, period. I feel like I try for myself, and I feel like I've been able to do it. But then being able to present that in a way that other people can understand, and also giving techniques to be able to get better at it. I don't know that I've, you know, figured that out or anything, but at least I'm attempting to, and I know that application of it is pretty freaking tough. So yeah, hopefully this provides at least a decent look into one of the things I think is one of the things, if not the thing, I think is most important. If I was to rank order the fundamentals, or at least it's the hardest one to figure out, because it takes the most effort all the time. You have to be 100% present to be able to do it successfully. So anyways, hopefully you guys got some out of this episode. And like I said, me and Brian will talk about it, and we'll try to revisit this and talk about like, hey, you know, what do you think, and why is it hard for you, and things like that. Try to hopefully have those questions, so, and hopefully he'll be able to answer them. So I think it's a really cool topic, and one that I mean I know people's opinions differ quite a bit about this. Like, there is different mindsets of it, and certain people think this, and there's people that have made fun of the precision rifle community for a long time about how they we mechanically tried to get rid of this, you know. But then there's people you see like John Pinch, Matt Allwine, that are able to go to these competitions, the hunter style competitions, with these light rifles that recoil quite a bit, and can still be very, very competitive and shoot really well with these guns, and manage recoil, make good trigger pulls. Their triggers are heavier, their guns are lighter, you know, and be able to still do good with it. And what is it, and why is, what's the reason? And I think the reason is because these guys are able to do some of these things pretty effectively. So yeah. Anyways, that's kind of my take on it, and like I said, you can be in the camp that just makes your gun as heavy as possible and put those lighted trigger on there and just accept the fact that you're gonna slap and miss sometimes. But I think that's not the place to be. In fact, I think that having a light trigger and a heavy rifle is not bad, but driving it in the correct way, having good fundamentals, like as far as like trigger control and all that goes, like, this is all going to make you even better. So anyways, hopefully that makes sense to you guys. Hopefully you got some out of it. And like I said, I will do a follow-up on, and me and Brian can go more into some of our recent practice sessions and talk about kind of what he thought and his opinion on it. So, anyways, thanks for listening. And like I say, I've said it in the past, I made an Instagram page for the Mythology Marksmanship, and I'll just put up a link here or whatever, so you guys, if you follow it, you at least have a notification saying, hey, got an episode coming out or out now, and so you guys will know about it or whatever. So anyway, thanks for listening. I know I get listeners from I've looked on my thing every now and again to get listeners from all over the world. So thanks for tuning in and listening wherever you guys are at. And if you guys have any questions, whatever, I really like the questions, and I know I'm not always the best at responding, but I sure try. Sometimes it takes me a while. Sometimes they get buried and then I forget about them, and I try to get back to them every now and again. I go through, but I really do. I do appreciate it. And appreciate the interaction, and I do think about like each question and try to see like what questions people want answered, and try to steer topics that direction. So anyways, hopefully you guys don't feel like I'm ignoring your questions. Please feel like I do read the questions, and like I say, I try to respond, whether it's on here or whether it's on there. I don't do as good in the typing out a response to everything because, well, it just takes a long time, and that's part of the reason why I started this. But if you put a question on there, I'm going to try. I do try to get to them on the podcast. So, anyways, yeah, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you guys later.